This is an Enterprise Time Security podcast. I'm here with James Spiteri of Elastic.
Hi, Ian. I've been with Elastic for about 4 months now. I am a solutions architect, and I specialize in cybersecurity use cases. I cover the whole Europe, Middle East, and Africa region. I've been using Elastic for security for the past 3 years or so, purely in security operations, meeting compliance requirements. Before that, I was using other tools, but I really ended up shifting to Elastic for many, many reasons, which I'm happy to talk about.
Let's get the difficult thing off the table, the breach the other day. Breaches happen, particularly when it's open source, because if we ship them with a fixed password, we'd be shouted at. If we ship them with no password, we get shouted at. How do we better get users when they take on an open source product to secure it during the setup phase?
We, as a company, really understand that not everyone finds securing internet-facing systems as easy. By default, when you actually install Elasticsearch, it's only available to the host that it's running on, so localhost. It's usually either someone has used Elasticsearch from another vendor on a cloud solution, which ends up running the open-source version of our stack without any sort of authentication or encryption or anything of the sort. It's the only thing they have available to them. In terms of securing open source, so we actually offer, even though our core is all open source, we actually offer, as part of our commercial features, is security. We actually offer everything from very modern encryption to role-based access control to very granular role-based access control as well. And you can integrate it with stuff like Kerberos, SAML, the Active Directory. We actually offer that as a company. For people who want to get started quickly, we offer a full SaaS service, which includes the security offering, and that's as little as $16 a month. You get all the power of the open source and all the power of the commercial features as well. That's usually what we recommend. For people who don't want to take that step yet, it's just about making sure what you're trying to do and understanding the implications of putting something on the internet, because most people actually don't get that. They don't get how the internet works. They don't get that there's people actively scanning these systems as well. We have a full blog post about this on how users who are still running the open source version of the stack get some limitation of security in there, just to get them started, even get them familiar with the product, and help them at least have some security in there without exposing everything to the internet.
How do you get your partners who are selling this downstream, because clearly they're disconnected from you, the additional security elements you're offering aren't necessarily always going to be there because they're looking to add their own stuff. How do you get them to tighten up what they're offering to do a better job of assisting their customers in being more secure?
There's two types of partners. There are companies who grab our open source product and just actively resell it. It's not exactly a partnership. In that case, it's completely up to them, right? There's not much we can do there because our license for our open source product allows them to do whatever they want with it. We even have vendors like Amazon. They grab our open source version, they host it, not backed by us, not supported by us. Unfortunately, they actually give their users an option to run it without any sort of security. We don't encourage that whatsoever. In that particular sort of open source partner relationship, that's up to them. For our commercial partners, then they have the backing of our commercial software. They don't even have to worry about it. It's on. When you apply a commercial license, that's on by default. Even in terms of setting up passwords and stuff, it's all part of the bootstrap process, so you'll be asked to generate passwords for different roles. It's a very easy process.
For that first group of customers, as you say, there are people out there constantly scanning the internet, looking for bits and pieces, looking for servers to attack. Is there a point where you start yourselves to do that scanning, look for those customers who have found themselves in that situation, not so much as a sales thing, but at the very least to say, look, you're using our product, you've taken the open source route, but we can see you, which means other people can see you and your data's at risk. It gives them some sort of hint. Is that a plan?
We've actually have discussed this. The problem with that is knowing who to get in touch with. Even if you use something like Shodan, we have saved reports on finding Elasticsearch servers on Shodan, for example. It's generally trying to find out who they belong to. You can use stuff like Whois and stuff like that, but with GDPR and all this, it's getting harder and harder. What we try and do is with these blog posts and stuff, so they are out there. We just recently updated it to cater for the more recent breaches as well and talk about our cloud offering and how we can help do that. We have discussed it. It's just how do we execute it efficiently and get the right information for the right people. We actively have reports on how many open Elasticsearch servers there are. We keep track of that.
You mentioned in your introduction that you actually use it yourself for security. So what do you do with it?
I'm a big security guy. Any system I set up, I always do it with security in mind. I have a firewall at home, so I'm one of those people. So I actively ingest my firewall logs, for example. I enrich them. Every time I either spin up a new server, both for any personal projects I'm doing, I always have Elasticsearch. Even if it's not for security, even just for diagnosis and figuring out an issue. Anything from your traditional firewall logs to even now I ingest, for example, certificate transparency logs. For anyone who's not familiar, certificate transparency is the concept of every time a certificate authority signs a certificate, that's logged in a public log that anyone can see. Now you have an instant way of telling if a certificate was generated for a domain you own. I actively ingest those logs for my domains as an example, which is one of the things Elastic is really good at, is being agnostic to the data sources. I gave a webinar a few months ago on how I use Elastic for threat hunting, and I still use it. It just really allowed me to do what other security tools didn't allow me to do.
So what is that? When you say things other security tools can't do, a lot of people say that, but often when they describe it, you think, well, hang on, this tool does that, this tool does this. Your security guy, why does it do things others don't do?
You have to remember Elasticsearch was a search engine to start with. We inherited a bunch of features being a search engine that I can use for security. One of them is the ability to run fuzzy queries, looking for something with deliberate mistakes in it. In the past, what I've done, ingested email logs with a from address in there. I ran a fuzzy query on those from addresses. So now if someone sent me an email that is similar to my domain, but it's not, it's a very easy way to detect it. I don't have to do any regexes or any of that funky stuff. I just perform a very simple fuzzy query purely because it's a search engine. Some other stuff, we have things like aggregations. It's very easy to do unique counts and all that stuff. I used to use something as simple as aggregations to detect man-in-the-middle attacks. So I would periodically ingest my ARP cache, and if the MAC address for my gateway address has more than one value in 2-minute period, that's probably a man-in-the-middle attack, unless there's like a hardware failover event or something. So all these sort of things, even just using Kibana, we have features like autocomplete now, so I don't even need to learn a query language. Because we are a very fast search engine, I don't need to worry about making mistakes either. We really focus on sub-millisecond responses. That's something from other tools that blew my mind. That's one of the biggest reasons I shifted to Elasticsearch.
If we look at most enterprise teams, they're struggling to the most basic ingestion of logs and make sense out of it. Many of them would never think of using a search engine. They would just throw it in a database, they run database queries, run some analytics on it. How do we get them to shift their focus? Because they're so inwardly looking that actually the search engine element of being able to go and do that tracing and leave it to do those searches for them is completely missing from their own internal protection.
It's an education thing at this point. The security world, unfortunately, is still very closed. As a company, we're really trying to change that because it's one of the reasons why we haven't been successful as a global security community. That's why attackers are successful, because they contribute, they help each other. Whereas a security community, they're fairly closed. They don't like sharing what they've done in terms of internal practices and stuff like that. So we're really trying to change that. We're really trying to educate people on why using something like Elasticsearch is so powerful for security. We actively contribute. We give webinars, we do meetups. We don't charge anyone for this sort of thing. It all comes out from us. And even in terms of content, so now we are making it easier as well if you have a bunch of different sources going into Elasticsearch so we can contribute. We're talking about the Elastic Common Schema here, which went in beta about a couple of weeks ago. If someone builds a dashboard based on the Elastic Common Schema, they can put it up anywhere and someone else can use it because all the field names are going to be the same. So we're really trying to focus on that as well. But at this point, going back to the original question, it's really about education, just making people aware that something like this does exist.
How do you start prepping that market? As you say, anybody can put a dashboard up because those links will be in that dashboard. If I look around, we've got a good dozen to two dozen open source engines out there that we can draw on. Are you going to start by pushing some dashboards out there to give these people a head start?
If you're familiar with our Beats are very lightweight data shippers that allow you to very easily get data inside of Elastic. Those all come with default dashboards. We do stuff like this as well. Even for some of our commercial products, machine learning. We ship what we call default machine learning jobs and even give examples of machine learning recipes. So that's all content you can get out there. Even some of our partners are doing a really good job. We have partners like SOC Prime, for example, who built a very easy way to translate more common security query languages like ArcSight, Splunk, or even just the Sigma framework, for example, into Elasticsearch queries and into our alerting framework called Watcher. Partners are actively working on it. The market is getting there. They're understanding now how powerful Elasticsearch is. When you consider that there are so many security vendors using us as a backend, that's raising awareness. So you have people using us for storage, but even just the engines on, for example, some firewalls. Like we have partners like Palo Alto who run Elasticsearch on their security devices. That's starting to really get people's eyes open. And a lot of people are now coming to us. So initially for security, we were going to them saying, hey, have you thought about using us for security? But especially ever since I've joined, I've really seen that a lot of people are coming to us. We've heard so much about you in the security space. Please tell us more. And that's actually one of my roles within Elastic, why I'm here, because I've used it for security in the past. Anyone can talk about security, but unless you understand the pain points of having to go through it, it really resonates more with people, having been there. Even just working through compliance. Every time I put Elasticsearch in front of an auditor, be it like PCI DSS, ISO 27001, ISAE, they love it because it makes their life so much easier as well. Stuff I've done in the past is, as data's coming in, I would add a field with the PCI requirement that something's filling. So then when I'm in front of an auditor, is, okay, how have you covered PCI requirement 1061, for example? I just search for 1061, and all those results come up. And then I can put all those in the dashboard as well.
One of the challenges of having too much data in one location is that we run the risk of moving from anonymized logs into personal information. More importantly, as we search through attacks and we search through who's been impacted, bit by bit, whether we like it or not, we slowly start to grab in PII. When you're talking to people on the security floor, how many of them understand the risk of the way that we search and we trace through an attack? Because they become GDPR questions.
Most people actually get this. They understand how important it is to secure PII data. They actually do understand, and they come to us with questions on how can we anonymize data within Elasticsearch. We do have a full blog post about it when GDPR came out, using pseudonymization and all that stuff. If you go back to our earlier discussion around our commercial offering around security, one of the things we have is field-based security. If there are certain fields within an index or within a document that you don't want people to see, you can hide those. We actively make sure that that product's kept up to date. We introduce the concept as well as attribute-based access control, not just role-based access control. We are aware that this is an issue because we actually say, ingest everything. Don't limit to what you want to ingest. Even some stuff I've done in the past is ingest HR vacation data. Just to give an example of how I use that, if someone is logging in when they're meant to be on vacation, that's an anomaly. That shouldn't happen. I used to use our field-level security to secure parts of that data which I didn't want to see, or I definitely didn't want to see. Sometimes being in the security world, you find out about stuff that you definitely won't want to find out. Even having access to like proxy logs, you're seeing users' traffic. Even just seeing a host name, now everything's encrypted, so which is great. But sometimes it gives things away about people which I definitely don't want to know as a security person. I'm not interested in that. That's why we offer this sort of tools, even at the ingestion layer, to anonymize it, and once it's in there, to protect it with field-level security.
One of the challenges we have in a lot of organizations is somebody joins, they get given a set of permissions. And the longer they stay at a company, the more permissions they get, because nobody ever takes your access rights away. That leads to an awful lot of unintended breaches, partly because they access documents they no longer really should be accessing, because it's interesting or because somebody asked them a question. It also helps create this big problem we have of accidental disclosure, somebody attaching files into an email and sending it to the wrong email address or the wrong block of email addresses. Pulling that stuff into a search engine rather than a database to do the query again seems to make a lot more sense. Are you seeing people worrying about these as problems, or are they still on the periphery of what they're trying to track down?
Most of them are worried about it. What we've seen as well is how authentication has changed. What used to be, let's call it the Active Directory approach, is changing a lot ever since the cloud era. So now people are using Google a lot more, they're using Microsoft Authentication a lot more. It gets easier to log that sort of activity inside of Elasticsearch. But what I would say is it's a lot easier to find this sort of activity within Elasticsearch. So if you have that sort of logs going into Elasticsearch, you're going to quickly find out if someone is looking at stuff they shouldn't be looking. We also have the concept of part of our security commercial feature that we offer is very granular audit logging. So you can tell what people are looking at, what queries they're running, that sort of thing. That also helps tremendously, just making sure people aren't doing what they shouldn't be doing. Having the right logs in there, it makes a massive difference. Having the right logs in there, even if, let's say, you start off with someone having very, very, very open permissions to everything, like you said, you can't just take everything away from them because probably they won't be able to do 90% of the work. My general consensus is get the logs around that person in there.
Keep using the phrase, the right logs. Most people have been told to grab all logs that they can, and the reality is that many of those logs have no real benefit for them. They're just more data that obfuscates what they should be looking for. What are the right logs?
That's a very good question. I mentioned earlier that we have the concept of threat hunting. Part of threat hunting is to build a hypothesis on what you're looking for, based on either what your organization does or what you sell, what sector you're in. This is where you start saying, okay, let's say I have an e-commerce website. I sell products on a website. So obviously you're going to say, I need to protect my website, first of all. In my head, I would get those logs in. Probably going to have a document store like Elasticsearch or database. So you're going to get those logs in. So you start doing that. Those are the more obvious ones. But then you'd say, how can someone exploit something internally? Let's say someone tries to exfiltrate data from a system. I want to be able to catch that because for me, it's very important that something like that doesn't happen. So I would work within my scenario of getting that sort of login. You have to understand security is a journey. Sometimes I would be looking at something, or even just something happens online. I should really be looking for this. So then I start working on, okay, how am I going to get those logs in to be able to capture this when a massive vulnerability comes out, for example. Let's take WannaCry from 1.5 years ago. That was huge, right? That affected so many people. What generally tends to happen is it's a flash in the pan. Something like that happens, then goes away in terms of media and the press. But then it's still there. It's still a vulnerability. So just making sure that you have the right logs in place to capture that sort of thing. So in that case, it would have been, for example, DNS log to look up the query that would have killed it eventually. It really depends on your environment, what you're trying to do. Just to take an example, I was very concerned with insider threats. People exfiltrating data, people accessing what they shouldn't be doing, people getting around my security controls. So let me give an example, a real-life scenario. One day I was looking at all our firewall traffic, and I was noticing there's a bunch of ports being opened to port, I still remember, 7777 to some ASN in France. One of the things we do really well is enrich the data in Elasticsearch, with one of the possibilities is autonomous system name. So I'm looking at all this data, and I had no idea what it was, but I was seeing like a handful of people do it in. And then I looked at our logs from systems, so we had things being installed on systems, and it turned out that it coincided with the installation of an Opera browser, which has an inbuilt VPN. I ran that and said, huh, let me see if this is the traffic. You turn on the VPN. Yep, that's pretty much it. You'll be looking at something and it's like, oh, I should really be blocking this. Another example of trying to block data leak and insider threat is I was very concerned with people opening up TeamViewer sessions or Chrome Remote Desktop. Again, I'm like, okay, how am I going to sort of log that activity? Because it was previously very hard to do. One of the beats we offer is actually MetricBeat, which gets system metrics. One of the metrics being processes that are being run. In my head, okay, does TeamViewer open a new process when I open a new session? It did. So then I used those system metrics logs that I wasn't potentially using for security before, and now we're using for security. It really depends on the use case you're trying to capture and the hypothesis you end up coming up with. I would say still put the logs in there if you don't know what you're going to do with them yet, because eventually you will find a reason for them, all the way from printer job logs to CCTV motion events. Put them in there. One of the things we encourage at Elastic is to put all the data in there, because we don't penalize you for putting more data in there, right? Because at one point you're going to need it, and it's going to solve a problem, especially since we've moved away from the perimeter networks. You can no longer rely on people going through a firewall, picking it up that way. You have to get host-level data. You have to get cloud logs. This is where the Elasticsearch starts to make things less challenging, because we can take in all that data.
2019's about upon us. So what are you expecting to be the pain points?
There's going to be an even bigger shift to cloud, especially now since every single service is on the cloud. From Kubernetes to now we've seen the launch of like a hosted Kafka from Amazon. The traditional data center, if it's not already died, it's slowly dying. That shift is going to happen a lot quicker, a lot faster in 2019. The challenge around getting those logs in, which is something we've really focused on at Elasticsearch. So making sure, for example, people have an easy way of getting Docker logs, Kubernetes logs. I think we're going to see the adoption grow tremendously in 2019. I don't really like making too many predictions, but I really feel that approach is going to spike up tremendously in 2019, purely because of how cheap it's gotten. If cost to cost, it really, really doesn't make sense. Unless you have super sensitive data, you work in federal environment or something like that, it really does not make sense for you to run your own infrastructure anymore. From a cost perspective, from a people perspective, and I think 2019 is going to be the year where the cloud markets just explode even more than they have already.
James, thank you for your time today.
No problem. Thanks for having me, Ian.